Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Today, we have a very, very special guest with us. We have Nyla Khan, and Nyla is a 27-year-old entrepreneur. She's a multimillionaire helping women and girls get educated, and she has started several businesses. So Nyla, welcome to the show. It's great having you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate being here. And I just love this idea of holistic wealth. So I'm excited to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to have you here. And now Nyla, I just want to start with your journey because, you know, you have such an inspirational story. You've done amazingly well. And so just the story around, you know, how you started your business and how that's been going, that would be amazing.
Sure. So I like to think of my journey as starting way before I was even actually working, because I think that a core part of my journey at work is a core part of who I am. And it's a core part of what makes me who I am, which is what I love, which is really around creating, you know, social impact through education. And I was about 13 when I'd made that decision. I was really influenced by Oprah and a couple of other really strong female role models that I had in my life, journalists, freedom advocacy workers, social justice warriors at the time, which means something very different today, but really inspired by them to make that move of wanting to do something for the greatest many. And when I say the greatest many, I mean those that needed it the most, primarily women and children, because they're the most vulnerable parts of our society. At first, I didn't know how I wanted to do it. I knew that there were certain issues I wanted to challenge and address, but I didn't know that education was the only way that I would go. And over the years, I kind of figured out that to create the change that we want to see in the world, it needs to come systemically and it needs to come in a way where it's encouraged, you know, in children. We encourage children to ask the right questions, to be getting the right information. It's only then can we actually challenge, you know, the status quo. And so that's kind of how I got into education. As for the success, I have to be honest with you and say that I never planned on being an entrepreneur in a traditional business sense. I always knew I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and there was nothing that I would let stop me reach my goals and my dreams. But my goals and dreams were really around impact. Business came along the way, and it made sense to me. And that's why business came along the way. It made sense that I had to adapt to business models, to business ways of working, in order to achieve those dreams and goals. And so I kind of like to see myself somewhere in the middle of being a social entrepreneur. And I think that that's important because it also really informs the way I see money. And I see it informs my relationship with creating wealth for myself, but also thinking about creating wealth for other people.
You've done some amazing work, both in the Middle East and in Africa, you know, with different educational technologies and bringing them to rural areas, which is just amazing. Can you tell us more about that and what kind of impact that has had on rural and remote communities in countries like Africa?
Absolutely. So the aim here was, we have with us a literacy assessment that uses AI and eye tracking. And the goal here was to take what works best in other parts of the world and adapt it to different environments, such as remote and rural spaces. Now, one of the biggest issues our world is facing is the issue of overpopulation of urban centers. It's caused everything from disease to food accessibility issues to you name it, basically. Overpopulation has created multiple issues for our world. And one of the things that we forget is that the reason people are moving from rural areas is because of the lack of opportunity and the lack of access. So how can we then rethink? Instead of thinking about how do we make more spaces in urban centers, which is something that people are battling right now and tackling, what about creating centers of innovation and access within rural areas through schools? Because schools are such an interesting part of our society. They provide power in so many ways, not just to children, but to the larger society as a whole. And what you see in many remote schools is they actually have boreholes as well, which are basically areas where people can go and collect water from. So taking that kind of inspiration, the idea was like, why don't we go to these remote areas? Why don't we bring the same access and quality of education that we're focusing on in urban centers and take it to the most remote parts of the world? So for example, the one that we went to across Africa within this summer, my co-founder was in Gambia, I was in Rwanda and Kenya, and within Kenya, we went to the Maasai Mara. And it was really important that when we bring technology and high quality education, we meet people where they are. So it's not about bringing smart boards and classrooms and all of this fancy stuff. The reason we took AI and eye tracking to this remote area is because what we know is a current need for them is literacy. And what this technology did was it can offline, that meeting connectivity, assess the kids' literacy and help us then understand how to train the teachers to help the children where they are. So not only is it easy to use, it's accessible because there isn't a need for high bandwidth internet. And at the same time, it's addressing a need that they have, which is low levels of literacy. And so that's kind of how, when I think about education, when I think about impact, when I think about technology, it needs to answer these really essential questions. You know, does it meet people where they are? Is it addressing an important need for them? And is it affordable? Those are kind of the three main things. And then outside of that is, okay, so now that we've answered these three questions, how can we take this a step further and rethink this current model of rural schools in remote areas and really think about how we can make this a center of change and a center of opportunity to address bigger issues such as urban migration and things like that?
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And as you're talking, I'm just wondering about how the technology helps, for instance, in that rural and remote setting. Is it with educational technology instruction, as you mentioned, literacy, or is it in allowing those rural and remote communities to adapt technologies to do other things in the community, whether it's, you know, with agriculture or something else? And, you know, I'm just very interested in this because we are trying to embark on a project, a similar project in Jamaica in a remote and rural community. And so this is all very interesting. In terms of how the technology gets used and how we can use it for not only instruction, but to help the community with wider economic development objectives.
So that's a great question. So it answers two dreams of what you're asking. So the first one, when it comes to the actual school. So what it does for literacy is in under 5 minutes, so in about 2 minutes, teachers for the first time in their lives in these areas can actually assess a child's literacy reading level with 99% accuracy, can screen for dyslexia, and has targeted intervention, which basically means once the assessment is over in the 2 to 3 minutes that it takes, immediately get the results. And over there where it mentions the results, it provides interventions, which basically guides the teacher on how to help that child. So much of a teacher's time is filled in assessment. Hours and hours of their day is filled with assessment. Over here, we're removing the unnecessary, and this is where technology works. Technology is never meant to replace the teacher. The teacher is one of the most central parts of our education. It is not meant to replace the teacher. It is meant to improve her teaching or his teaching. And so what this does is it saves all of those hours and all of that time spent on literacy assessment, or to be honest, never spent on literacy assessment, which is the case in most of these environments, and actually just providing them the tools they need to be able to help a child where they are. And in actually a very interesting, in younger's literacy in Ghana, what we saw in rural Ghana when we did this project, we were able to increase the girls' levels in 3 months from 4% to 45% in literacy reading.
Wow, that's amazing.
It gives me chills when I think about it, because I think that's what we want to hear. That's what helps us, I think, as co-founders or as entrepreneurs. That's why we wake up every single day. And that's why, even though the days are, there's some days that are bad, there's some weeks that are bad, there's some months that are bad. But when you look back and you can say that, you know that there's power to what you're doing, there's a higher purpose to what you're doing. It's more than just you. It's so much more than that. Then you have the hope and inspiration to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, it's about the impact, and you can see that, you know, you can see those results, and these are tangible results in people's lives. So that's amazing.
and I think, right, being an entrepreneur is sometimes glamorized. And I always tell people this, is that don't get into it if you're not sure of what you of the product that you're bringing into the world? Is it fixing a problem? That's first. And second, don't do it if you're not ready for some really tough days and some tough weeks. You know, you really have to love what you do to be able to be, you know, successful, not just monetarily successful, but even just kind of happy, you know, just because you're good at something. You know, there's a lot of great companies out there that pay a whole lot better and give you a lot more stability and balance than being an entrepreneur would.
So Nyla, that was an amazing point and a good segue into my next question, which is about the health and wellness aspect of being entrepreneurs. Because as you mentioned, there are lots of long days and long nights, weeks and months of growing a business can take its toll physically. And you really have to be ready. And from the sounds of it, it sounds like you travel quite a bit. You're around in different communities, going around and different parts of the world. And we were discussing before we started the conversation just about, you know, health and wellness and how important that is, especially when you're living in chronic pain and you're an entrepreneur. So I really want to get your perspective on that, because I think it's so important and it's such an important topic now with COVID-19 and, you know, so many people suffer from chronic pain and different, you know, related illnesses. And so, we'd just love to hear your story around that.
You know, I have a lot to say about it because I'm still in the midst of it. So, I got my diagnosis for fibromyalgia and RA very much, you know, in the throes of the pandemic. And I remember thinking to myself, I said, and this is why I mentioned my last point, which is that you have to really love what you do to make it worth it to be running your business, you know, because honestly, running a business isn't the most conducive for having chronic pain. It isn't, because it's oftentimes triggered by stress. And if it's not stress, it's triggered by, you know, not forgetting to do things like take care of yourself. And taking care of chronic pain is almost like having a full-time job. It really is. It's very much the reason why I decided to make the move to Zanzibar for at least the next 3 months until I can figure out what a space for me would look like. Because when you're running a business, the one thing you want just from your wellness perspective is that you have a calm environment, because no matter what, you can't control what's going to happen at work. But what you can control is your own mental well-being. And I think having a calm environment around you, or having something that's, you know, really around taking care of yourself and you know, making yourself more resilient and focusing on your internal well-being. If you can do that, that's great. And in for me in Zanzibar, the weather suits my condition. And then also it's affordable as well to live in a place like Zanzibar. So I think that those are things that you really need to take account for. You know, you can ignore it for only so long, because the pain, you know, you can ignore it with all kinds of ways, you know, whether you're taking your doctor prescribed you pain medication, or you're just refusing to kind of acknowledge the pain because it's not too bad now. But oh my God, having done that, having ignored it, when it hits you, I remember when it first hit me, I was ignoring it for months. And then when it hit me, I remember not being able to mentally or physically move. You know, I was so exhausted. And at that point, I was like, oh, this is what it means when I need to actually make a decision that benefits my health over work. And you don't want to get to that point. The thing is, you can avoid that point completely. You can avoid having to take time off work for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or however long you need. You can avoid needing to get to that point by just being aware of what's going on right now and taking measures. And I think one of the things that people have to be prepared for with chronic pain and running a business or being in a high pressure job is that you have to make lifestyle changes. There has to be an overhaul of your lifestyle, and you have to be more responsible about your health, because at the end of the day, your business isn't going to be going anywhere. Your work isn't going to be going anywhere. You aren't. And I didn't understand this. I didn't really understand it until I experienced it. I think you maybe have felt this before. I think everyone feels this way, especially women. We feel so guilty about taking time off. I feel so guilty about, you know, even being in Zanzibar, I'm working full time, but I'm still feeling guilty. And I think that that is, you know, I'm learning myself to unlearn those things, because in entrepreneurship, people are always kind of parading around this idea that you have to like struggle to make it and you have to do this. I don't know if those narratives are true. I don't think all of them are true. And I don't think that, that's the kind of success I would want in my life. I don't think I would define that as success or a happy life.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny because we've had some amazing female entrepreneurs on the show. And, you know, we've spoken about that, you know, these messages that we get And some of them are money messages around, you have to work yourself to the bone to be successful. You have to work yourself to death to have a successful business. And you're right, that's not a holistic perspective on success at all. And that's why, you know, even this holistic wealth message is so important to me, because I've had like a series of disruptions, you know, like starting with the death of my husband, just 8 weeks after giving birth. And then years after with COVID, now that we're in a diagnosis of arthritis, fairly young too. And that was just during COVID, and as well a spinal injury. This is the first time that I'm getting a chance to talk about it on the podcast and dealing with the guilt. And it's so funny, in my upcoming book, and this is another announcement too, that I'm making for the first time, you know, the book, Holistic Wealth, The Art of Recovery from Disruption, comes out next March on International Women's Day. And in that book, I talk about these things, because this diagnosis is new just since COVID. And so I'm drilling down more deeper into this next book about how, you know, we recover from disruption. And that's why like conversations like these are so important to me and so important to the audience, because you can't divorce, you know, your wealth from your health. And like, if you don't have your health, there's no wealth. And so you're right, we have to learn. It's almost like relearning self-care, because we think we know what that is.
Yeah.
Until you get a diagnosis like this, you don't. Right?
I think one of the things you also brought up is this idea of like, how do you recover from disruptions? And I think people don't talk about that enough. And it's so good to hear that that's something you're addressing, because I think, again, we're so hard on ourselves, but actually your strength, the strength you have as a person, this resilience you need in business, that comes from recovering. That comes from, the only way to experience that is by recovering. I mean, there's this amazing power that you feel, you know, when you're able to kind of be kind to yourself and recover in a kind way, because I think it makes you a better leader as well. I think it makes you a better employer. I think it makes you a better person. I think people like you more, your clients, you know. You're a better person overall, I think, when you're able to recover from disruptions in a healthy way versus just kind of.
Absolutely.
And I think another thing that kind of popped in my head as you were talking about is that the trauma and the pain that we carry and how that manifests into our physical ailments. I don't know if you've read the book, The Body Keeps Score, and I honestly think every single person, human being, should read it. And my plan is, of course, to incorporate it into curriculum, but it really talks about how our pain, we store our pain as stress in our bodies, and our bodies remember that. And that stress turns into what is later arthritis, autoimmune diseases, heart attacks. I mean, when we think about high functioning CEOs in Fortune 500 companies, how healthy are they? How healthy are successful entrepreneurs? They're probably not, because the kind of stress that we take on isn't natural. It's not, and it shouldn't be celebrated anymore. I think what's inspiring is to hear stories like you said, like recovering from disruptions or addressing your, you know, your pain, your trauma from experiences that you go through in life. And I think it's a lot easier for us to say it now, but I really wish that at the point where maybe I didn't recover from my disruptions, I could hear someone talk about it then. So I'm really happy that we're speaking about it too, and that you're talking about it in your book.
Absolutely. And you brought up so many things a while ago that made me really happy. But I just wanted to share a bit of context too on, in terms of The Art of Recovery from Disruption. So in the first book, in the first Holistic Wealth book, that's the 32 Life Lessons book, Arianna Huffington posted a quote from the book on all her social media platforms. And that was the quote that she posted on her social media. It was a quote about, the education system teaches about linearity. It doesn't teach the art of recovery from disruption. And she took out that quote from the book and posted it. And I was like, that is amazing, because you know how you mentioned you want to incorporate it into curriculum now? That's what I'm thinking about doing, because what I realized from my first big, massive disruption when my husband passed away was that I felt like, hey, nobody taught me how to recover from disruption. You know, it was all this linear patterns that we were teaching kids in school. And I thought, no, we need to teach them the art of recovery from disruption, because that's how they're going to be resilient. Exactly. And you know what? We're living in an age of disruption. We're living in an era of disruption. And she posted that quote, you know, before COVID-19 hit. It was when the book just came out in November 2019. And I thought to myself, for the next book, I'm going to zero in on that quote. Like, I'm going to just literally use that quote as the basis. And that's how that quote is now the title of the next book. And when you said you want to incorporate it in curriculum, I thought, yes, because that's exactly the vision that I have. Because I feel like, you know, if you look at your experiences, you know how you mentioned that book about the body keeping score, you know, in the introduction to this book that's now up for pre-order, I say, like, if I survey my own personal disruption timeline, and I'm still young like you, Nyla, we're still very young. Most of us, millennials, Gen X's, Gen Z's, most of us will be able to point to significant, massive disruptions in our lifetime just because of what we've been living through. And so how are we, you know, not only preparing ourselves or coping, but how are we preparing future generations? Like, I'm a mom of three kids, you know, and I think about my kids and I'm like, I need them to be able to master these disruptions in their lives, you know, in a holistic way, not just to get up and go, and then your body's suffering, your back is breaking.
Yep.
You know, I want you to have that lifestyle, that holistically, I talk about this holistically wealthy lifestyle. Now that you're talking about, you know, incorporating it into curriculum design, which is my, you know, one of my overarching missions next, I want to hear your thoughts on that, you know, especially because we have so much in common personally. And, you know, you're in the education field and I'm kind of trending there now a bit because, you know, I set up the Institute on Holistic Wealth. And so I want to hear your thoughts on that, Nyla. Like, how are you thinking of incorporating this into curriculum design?
So I think one of the major things to start with is what you're doing, which is awareness, which is anecdotal experience, which is awareness. I think one of the things you just mentioned about your children is that I think that the best gift you can give a child is teaching them how to fish. And teaching them how to fish means teaching them how to live life. And living life is about coping with unexpected circumstances of loss and grief, or going through some forms of, you know, a trauma associated with unexpected violence. We want to believe we can shelter our children from everything, but we cannot.
Yeah.
And we cannot expect the world to change overnight. But the best thing we can do for them is to at least give them the tools and the skills needed to cope with those disruptions and traumas. There's an existing kind of education movement called trauma-informed care. And it's not just an education movement, it's also a health movement. And basically the idea is that it takes into account that most children have experienced some form of trauma or the other, just like we were talking about, is that everyone has experienced some kind of big or small or whatever, some level of disruption or trauma. And so what we must do in response to that as educators, as caretakers, as guardians, is that we start to adopt something of a more compassionate approach. And when I say compassionate approach, it's always going with the assumption that there is something, that there is an issue rather than there is a bad behavior. So we don't focus on punishment. And when I say punishment, I don't just mean, you know, in a very simplistic way of detention. I mean, even our systems are so punishing. You know, I mean, for example, why do people feel so guilty about, you know, not getting the best grades? Or why do, so mm-hmm. for example, with students, so it's all around competition and performance. But then there's another side of it, which is, why is it at work that women are treated differently because of the fact that they might be pregnant? Why should they feel guilty mm-hmm. about the fact that they get pregnant? So we have these really punishing rules and systems that we work with. And trauma-informed care is really around addressing people with a compassionate approach of saying, okay, these kids, this child is acting out in class because, you know what, maybe something's wrong at home. Or maybe what else could it be? And if there is something of what else could it be? And if most children are, what else could it be? Then what skills mm-hmm. should we be teaching them? So in a math class, for example, why are we teaching them just to count apples? Why don't we make the math lesson a compassionate inquiry lesson or a trauma-informed lesson? So I was working with a refugee in a refugee camp in Greece with Syrian and Iraqi children that were fleeing the war. The ISIS kind of takeover, and this was years ago. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago. And I remember dealing with not just children, but families that were incredibly traumatized. So even if the children hadn't experienced the trauma directly, they were experiencing it through their families. And what we found over there was that, look, education has to happen in the sense of, you know, traditional academics. But the problem is that education doesn't stop there. So how can we bridge limited amounts of time in the classroom, limited resources, with traditional academics and this need for life skills, which is around emotional regulation, which is around coping with grief and loss, which is around financial skills, which is around basic financial literacy, basic digital literacy. Right. You know, these are things, these are the rights of human beings. Every human being has the right to an education or a learning that gives them access to living a regular or like a healthy, happy life. And when I say healthy and happy, it doesn't mean that things don't happen. It just means that they have the skills to cope with them in a healthy way. They're not left stranded. You know, the thought that I would speak to little girls and boys and just to know the pain that they were suffering from and that no one, not in their families, not in the environment, knew how to address it. That's a big problem. And we saw this over the pandemic. Forget vaccinations. We didn't know how to deal with mental health. Even though we have been talking about it for years, we didn't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's where the curriculum really needs to step up because it hasn't at all.
Absolutely. And you are so right. I couldn't agree with you more. I have goosebumps because those are my exact thoughts. I went through it. I saw my oldest son at the time go through it when his dad died and he was 3 years old, just starting kindergarten, and teachers didn't know how to deal with it. The principal, I mean, it was like a cascading domino effect. Nobody knew how to deal with it with a junior kindergartner. So the curriculum needs to step up, as you said, from the very lowest levels to the very highest levels, because as adults, we don't know how to deal with it
at all.
And at all, it's unbelievable. And I think you're absolutely right. And it's so important. And I cannot stress, and you mentioned certain things. You mentioned financial literacy. You mentioned digital literacy. I mean, when I spoke about the art of recovery from disruption in that quote from the first book, I was thinking about financial literacy too, because I don't think we can be fully resilient if we're not financially resilient. And I wrote an article about, you know, for women's empowerment about, you know, women can't be fully empowered until they're financially empowered. And it's so amazing that when it happened to me, like, you know, when my husband died, and I found myself in that major disruption. I mean, I was a trained economist, and because, you know, that's what I'm professionally trained in. And I thought to myself, wow, like I could weather this storm financially because of that aspect. But what if I didn't? What if I was in a completely different field and just wasn't like a specialist in this area or didn't take a special interest then, you know, in that area? What would have happened?
Yeah,
and you're right. Everybody
has education.
Exactly. And so everybody has a right, as you mentioned, they have a right to this kind of information and education. And it's so important. And this is one of the goals we have in mind with a project that we're working on too, because it's this alternative learning format where we really want to get the whole person, that whole individual, you know, that kind of education that empowers the whole person to deal with disruption, to be able to recover and to deal with it. So this is so important, Niall, and I'm just so happy we're having this conversation.
No, it's incredible. I'm really interested to know more about your project as well. And, you know, if there are ways that we can collaborate or, you know, of course, I think with New Age, with anything that's new, the best thing to do is to work, you know, everyone who wants to work on it works on it kind of together. Because the more people you have, the more you can move the dial. But, you know, I think another thing is that, you know, being kind of young women of color, now is the best time to be a woman, I think, in relation to the past, like 200, 300 years. So we have that going for us, but it's still such a struggle in certain traditional areas, you know, to not be taken seriously. I think, at least from my end, is that you're always seen as either too far removed from the reality or anything that, because people don't like change. People do not like
change. Absolutely.
So you have to come in there you have to come in there with picket stands, or you just, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I definitely feel like sometimes I have to be the loudest person in the room or no one's listening.
Absolutely. And I have experienced it on both ends because, you know, as you're talking, you know how you mentioned punishing systems you know, as we witnessed, like in the US alone, 4 million mothers leaving the workforce during COVID.
It was ridiculous.
Part of the reason, part of the reason for that is that these punishing systems we have in organizations. I remember when I went back to work from maternity leave after my husband died, it was 8 weeks after I gave birth that he died, and I had to go back, and I went back into work widowed as a young mom, now a single mom. So my identity had changed. My whole outlook on life had changed.
Oh my God.
Here was I in a punishing system that was static and wasn't changing. And so many of the issues that we're reading about today in terms of women during COVID-19 leaving the workforce because it's just not flexible, it's punishing to moms who return from mat leave. And you're right. Sometimes you feel like you're just not taken seriously, or you're not, they're not
there's
listening.
Something wrong with you're you. Not, there's not something wrong with
exactly.
them. There's something wrong with you. And so you have
exactly.
to because even if you were to request it, it's not like people are sitting there being like, oh, wow, like you've experienced all of this. Of course, let's make the changes you need. No one's doing that. In fact, it's probably turned around against you and made, you know, you're made to feel like there's something wrong with you. So I really, my heart goes out to you. I don't know, you know, the level of strength and resilience that you've, you know, shown just by being where you are right now. Is really inspiring.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, I've really channeled that experience into this, you know, platform, which I'm so grateful for. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to share it with others and to really help improve lives, which is ultimately what I want to do, and to change systems and to you know, to use my experience to open people's eyes as to why we've been on the wrong path. And we're still on the wrong path, but we're at a critical point in history where we can start to do the right thing, where we can start to empower each other better. And, you know, because there's so much of my experience, as you mentioned, right, that could have been used, you know, because when anybody suffers from any kind of trauma or any kind of experience, There are lessons there. And, you know, and that was the viral article that I wrote that turned into the first book about the life lessons learned. And these are things that others can learn from and use to build their own resilience. Because as you mentioned, everybody's going through some kind of trauma, even if it's a more private trauma that's hidden that you probably would never, ever know about. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why I'm grateful for, you know, these conversations where we can discuss it and brainstorm and see what we can do to move the dial. And so, Nyla, you know, we mentioned financial literacy and financial empowerment, and that's a big part of it for me as well in terms of holistic wealth. And you've done amazingly well. And, you know, I know you took the quiz, the personal financial identity quiz, which is something I love talking about, because then we can get to kind of name our financial identity and share with others how it's impacted our lives, you know. And, you know, you became a multimillionaire at, you know, in your 20s, fairly young. And so can you share your results, any insights you have on that, how it's impacted your lifestyle, your business, that kind of thing?
So first I'm going to say it's the businesses that speak for themselves, not me. So now I think I got the minimalist in the the answer. For me, that there's a certain lifestyle I like to live, and beyond that, I don't see why I need that money. And so that money always goes back into the business. That's how I've lived my life. I don't think that that's necessarily the way that everyone has to live. I don't think that if you have the money that you shouldn't spend it. That's not what I mean. But what I mean is, for me at this point in my life, I get so much joy and pleasure from growing what we've built, my co-founder and I, or my other businesses. I believe that that money still needs to be put back into the business, because there's a lot more to be done. And I think that that is a very difficult decision sometimes as individuals we have to make, is do we look at the short term or do we look at the long term? And I think that goes for investment as well, right? It's that I can either take money now and spend it and think about the short-term returns on happiness and things like that. Or I think about the long-term and how I want to use that to further grow impact or grow business or grow my bottom line. So I'm at that point in my life currently. I know what my kind of monthly expenses are, what my life costs me. And I like to stay in that kind of realm and not move forward. And anything that's forward is either savings or it's put back into the business, primarily put back into the business.
That's, you know, those are some great tips to share, because I know there, you know, we have several entrepreneurs listening in and people who are interested in starting a business and growing a business, especially during COVID. And I think that's wonderful advice. So Nyla, do you then basically have a philosophy of plowing back like a certain percentage into the business and then your lifestyle remains, you know, fairly minimalist so you can achieve those goals?
So I've gotten to the point where now I've understood myself pretty well, and that may change, but not radically or drastically. You know, there's certain realities about yourself that you kind of know it's going to be part of your life, you know? So I know that for the next at least 10 or 20 years, I know what my desires and wants and things, you know, are around. And I know that it's not going to change drastically monetarily, my desires. But what is changing is my constant desire to create more and more impact. So what I do know is that while my expenses may not drastically change, my appetite for growing the business is definitely increasing. So the tip that I would really give when it comes to finances is know what your life costs you. And don't be afraid to put whatever you want in there. Put as much stuff as you want in there, but just know what it costs you. Because when you know what it costs you, even if you do not have it currently, you can work towards it as a goal. And then when you have extra, you can decide at that point whether you want to spend more or whether that should go somewhere else. But at least you know what your basic middle and kind of high levels of life look like. And I think that really helps me because it helps me feel like I can manage my life for the next 10 or 20 years. It gives me a lot of confidence and stability in knowing that I can afford my life. It's going to cost me this much. And I know it's going to cost me this much with inflation. It's not going to be a significant increase, but at least for me, that's kind of what makes me feel comfortable, because finances do funnily make me feel a little bit, you know, I always want to make sure that I have something to kind of fall back on. And I think you, especially as a mother, you probably feel this even more. You know, I think especially now austerity is probably, unless you're a VC or, you know, you have a huge trust fund, I wouldn't go around just kind of betting my money on risky investments. I would keep money now, at least for the next year, because we really don't know what to expect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's part of the art of recovery from disruption, right? That, you know, it's kind of not a good thing to do right now to go throwing money at very risky investments, because we just don't know. We're still in a period of uncertainty with COVID and different variants and the Delta variant. And we're hearing about all sorts of different variants, you know. So absolutely one of the things that is critical right now is hanging on to what we can and playing it safe to a certain point. Absolutely.
And I definitely think if you're just starting the business, you know, work, keep money flowing in from your, you know, let's say day job. Don't just jump into something like that. You know, like be prepared, have a plan. I think these are pretty common things, but sometimes it's so tempting. You know, when you have an idea, you just want to go all out. But it's just, this is such a turbulent time that something that could have worked in terms of a business 2 years ago or a year ago may not work today. So it is really important to take it more as an MVP approach, where you still have some form of, you know, money coming in, or if you have investments or savings, don't use them now. Save them. Yeah. I wouldn't use them now just because of the uncertainty of the world.
Absolutely. And those are wise words. Absolutely. You know, especially if you also have, you know, any health conditions.
I was just gonna
and
say.
You know, exactly. And you need your health benefits, or healthcare is a big cost for you, you know, yeah. Like whether yeah. you have to have, you know, other adjunct medical services like physiotherapy or some other holistic other, you know, therapy.
Yeah. The reason why I kind of really like being here is because my health costs had just gone off the roof, and I have insurance, but I just didn't see the point. I just really didn't see the point in spending that much money on medical bills, even if it was going through my insurance, because I need to be able to know I can sustain that, you know, I need to be able to sustain that as I go forward. So what are more sustainable ways to do that? That's one of the reasons why I'm trying out alternative therapies and treatments, because there's a lot out there, especially for chronic pain. A lot of it has to do with lifestyle, diet, you know, stress levels. So at least for me now, it's really about figuring out, okay, I know what my finances are for the next 10 years. but let me figure out my lifestyle because I want to be able to maintain a certain level of lifestyle for the next 10 or 20 years and know that that's something I can do.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that's kind of what brings me here. Of course, I do not have same kind of responsibilities that you do with children and things like that. So it makes it a lot easier for me to make those decisions. I think even if you are, there are centers around, there are experts online that you can consult with on basic things like diet. For example, with arthritis, you can't do any high impact exercises anymore. It puts a strain on your legs. And I used to love running and stuff like that. And now I'm just, you know, initially it was devastating because I was like, I can't run at my age. I can't run. That doesn't make sense to me. But now I've actually taken it in good stride and been really focusing on things like stretching and yoga and Tai Chi. And those builds can add up. You know, those builds add up, like acupuncture, things like that, they add up. And again, even if your insurance is covering it, 10 years from now, what if you don't have insurance? Do you have an alternative way? So I think it's about, you know, from now, from the get-go, trying to find that middle ground of, you know, finding an alternative / traditional medical route that fits your needs and that doesn't get you hooked on another system, if that makes sense. Just, you know, don't be completely dependent on just going and getting your meds and doing just medical treatment after medical treatment. There are basic things you can do in your everyday life.
Right. Absolutely. And it's so funny because I actually have a coaching program where I train certified holistic wealth consultants because readers of the book came back asking me to create a certification, women with, you know, MBAs in the financial field who are financial advisors, you know, and other women, doctors have come back and they've said, you need to do a certification program.
I saw.
Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons why I set up the Institute on Holistic Wealth, because I set up that certification program. And so part of the thing, or part of what I train in terms of the curriculum with this mastering the art of recovery from disruption, because you brought up a good point about, you know, well, if you're a mom, you might not be able to do certain things. What we train people to do is to really set up their holistic wealth portfolios. And the sooner, the better. The younger you are, the better, right? The sooner. It can't come too soon, because what we do is we plan for any disruption in the future and, you know, really set up a whole portfolio that will get you through these times, you know, financially and otherwise. You know how you spoke about health-wise as well, and putting in place those things with healthcare and insurances and all this.
It's so important.
All this, the whole gamut. And so, you know, as we talk about the healthcare aspect of it and insurances, I was fully prepared, luckily, even at the point my husband died, that we were well prepared and that we had everything in place and had investments and all of that. And that's what I would want for others too, like to have something in place so that if something happens and, you know, and I tell my holistic wealth consultants to plan for 2 disruptions per decade. When you survey, you know, the last 50, 100 years, you realize that's kind of what we all should plan for. So that's part of what I teach in the program too. And I'm hoping to expand it to other countries and for people to sign up from all over the world.
I think that that is amazing. You're basically training people to be prepared for risk. And everyone,
exactly.
And you're looking at it very much as a right versus a nice to have or a job specification, which is really,
exactly.
Really important, and including kind of like a multitude of ways to think about risk. Which is really,
exactly.
Yeah, which is really great. I'd love to have a further conversation with you about some of the work that you're doing in more rural, remote areas.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's have a further conversation. And I just wanted to let our viewers, our audience members, know where you're located so they can follow you and find you. Can you just tell them where to find you, your website and your social media, Nyla?
Absolutely. So the best way to reach me is on social media, is either on LinkedIn. So my name on LinkedIn, it's Nyla Khan Montessori, or you can find me as Nyla Khan. On Instagram, it's Nyla Khan. So ITS and then NYLAKHAN. That's my username. And then my websites for the companies are maraipartners.co. And it's Willow Tree Kids. So willowtreekids.com and kidsworldUAE.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, Nyla, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was amazing having you here, and it was amazing, you know, chatting with you about these important topics.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. I had a really great time. That was actually a very healing call in so many ways.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, KeishaBlair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth.com/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning, best-selling Holistic Wealth 32 Life Lessons to help you find purpose, prosperity, and happiness.